Welcome to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up on today's program, we'll head to Smith Island in the Chesapeake Bay, which scientists worry may one day be wiped off the map by climate change. Plus, we'll find out how residents here in Maryland are responding as a new law takes effect next week that will ban many kinds of assault weapons and require people to submit fingerprints to the state police to get a handgun license. But first, a very different story about guns and gun control. It has to do with last week's shootings at the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. Shootings that left 12 people dead before the shooter himself, Aaron Alexis, was killed by police. The shootings have provoked all sorts of responses. Some people say they should prompt us to look anew at problems with our mental health systems. Other people say we need tighter restrictions on guns. And in Washington, many in Congress and elsewhere are calling for reforms to the process of giving out security clearances to contractors and federal workers. U.S. Senator Tom Carper of Delaware is among those scrutinizing that security clearance process. He's chair of the Senate's Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. He joins me now by phone from Washington. Senator Carper, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be on your program. Thanks, Brian.
Tell me, when you first found out that the shooter at the Navy Yard was a federal contractor, what your reaction was to that news?
Well, first of all, I'm an old Navy guy. I spent 23 years of my life in the Navy, 4 years before that as a Navy ROTC midshipman at Ohio State, and a retired Navy captain. And when I heard that there'd been a shooting, my hope was that nobody was hurt, that nobody was killed. And subsequently, when I learned that 12 people had been killed, plus the shooter, my heart was broken. My heart was broken. For me, I spent as much of my life as I have in the Navy. This was this one was really close to home. So my first thought and my second and third thought were, frankly, for the victims and for their families. My fourth thought was, how did this happen? How did this person get a clearance? How did the alleged shooter keep a clearance, given his record of arrests and behavior? And who did the actual investigation into his clearance? And is there any policy in place for reexamining a clearance from time to time to see if things have changed in somebody's life that may warrant not having clearance? As a Navy veteran, I had not a confidential hearing, not a secret hearing, but top secret clearance. I was the air intelligence officer of my squadron on active duty for part of my active duty tours, in addition to being an aircraft mission commander, a P-3 mission commander. So I know a little bit about clearances, thought a lot about clearances.
Senator Carper, in general, I mean, with all of your history with the U.S. Navy and the military and then also in politics, how secure do you think our military bases are here in the U.S.? And I guess what would you say to people who work at forts and other military installations who are maybe wondering how safe it is to go to work now?
Well, everything we do, everything I do, I know I can do better. And we can obviously provide better security on a basis in other, not just military installations, but other federal installations and non-federal installations. It's a wild and crazy world that we live in. And we've seen all too often this occurrence again and again and again of people being killed, whether it's here or schools in Connecticut or theaters in other places. It's just almost become the new normal. What it suggests to me is we have to look at, one, the way we provide these clearances to see how can we do this better, and how can we not just it's one thing to go through the process of awarding a clearance. It's another thing to make sure that we are monitoring that and doing the right kind of oversight to ensure that something hasn't happened in this person's life that would suggest that they not, one, have that clearance, two, that they not have access, and the kind of access that, that the shooter was granted in this instance.
You said last week that you'll be holding hearings on this issue. Who do you plan on having at this upcoming hearing, and what do you hope will be the result at the end of that hearing?
We're working with Tom Coburn, who's the senator from Oklahoma, who's the ranking Republican on the committee. Our staffs are working together to identify a list of witnesses. My hope is that the hearing could occur as early as next week. It's been apparently been noticed as on Tuesday, November 1st. I believe that we're working with our Republican colleagues to identify a list of witnesses, majority witnesses, minority witnesses, and the questions that are most on my mind: how does fellow get a clearance? And if someone who's has led a troubled life as he has, how do we make sure that other folks who live similarly troubled lives are going to get clearances? Second, real important thing is do we just, you know, somebody may be perfectly fine, no problems, perfectly capable, deserving of a clearance or a secret clearance or even top secret clearance, but things go wrong in their lives, and things go wrong in the lives of a lot of us. Who was actually monitoring this fellow's behavior, particularly when he was arrested not once but twice, firing weapons, scaring people, hallucinating, notifying the police that he was hallucinating, hearing voices? Who's monitoring that kind of thing and making sure that the word got back, in this case, to the Navy? And apparently it did.
Well, who is monitoring it? I mean, who is monitoring?
We're going to find out.
That's
why we're having the hearing, to find out who is not just granting the hearing, not just granting the clearance, not just investigating, doing the investigation initially at the front end, but who's making sure that when something goes awry in a person's life, that should bring into question whether or not this person should still have, one, have a clearance, two, have access, in this case, have access to this building or this complex, that that we have someone thinking about that as well.
Yeah. And let's stay on access and clearance for a second. You know, as you know all too well, there's thousands upon thousands of people who have really, you know, high level security clearances in the United States. Do you think that number needs to be reduced? And do you think that maybe there's too many people that have access to sensitive information?
Just because somebody has a top secret clearance doesn't mean they have access to all top secret information. In the Navy, we used to say that just because you have the clearance doesn't mean you have the right to know. Even if you have the appropriate clearance, so you had to have a need to know. So there's three levels of clearances. One's confidential, and some say confidential and secret. There are about 3.5 million people in the country who have clearances that are confidential / secret. That's a lot of people. There are about a million, maybe a million and a half people who have top secret clearances. There are several divisions of top secret clearances. And if you happen to say you're Division A, you may not have access to information that's top secret in Division, say, B or C. The idea is that you've got to have the need to know before you have the access to the information. To me, a million and a half people with access to top secret information, that seems like a lot of people.
Yeah.
So my expectations will have some questions and hopefully some answers about why so many people having confidential and secret clearances. Why do so many people have top secret clearances, and do we need that many?
Do you think that at the end of these hearings and this discussion after this, you know, tragic incident at the U.S. Navy Yard, do you think that there's going to be fewer people with not just a need to know, but also a need to be there, so to speak?
I don't want to sort of leap ahead of the hearing and say, well, this is what I think the outcome is going to be. I don't honestly know, and my guess is that my colleagues don't either. I think we should go into this with an open mind, with a lot of questions, trying to get to the truth. In the Navy, if you want to get to the truth, you want to get to the bottom of things, you'd say, give me the straight skinny. That's what we'd say. Give me the straight skinny. I've said that a million times in my life. And what we want here, we want the straight skinny. We want the truth. Thomas Jefferson used to say that people know the truth, they won't make a mistake. We want to get to the truth. We want to get to the straight skinny. And hopefully we'll better ensure that we don't make mistakes in the future in terms of granting clearances to people and failing to monitor whether that clearance continues to be appropriate and whether their access to, whether it's a Navy base or an Air Force military, a Marine base or an Army base or some other federal facility or state, make sure that they should still enjoy the privileges that clearance provides them.
Well, Senator, there's a lot of Americans that want the straight skinny on what's coming up here in the next few weeks, this potential federal government shutdown as Congress works through this budget standoff, which here we are again. Do we anticipate a shutdown is going to happen? And if it does, how do you think that's going to impact people in Delaware?
My hope is that the government will not shut down. I used to be governor of our state for 8 years. We balanced our budget 8 years in a row. We cut our taxes 7 out of 8 years, created a whole lot of jobs in Delaware, and got ourselves paid down some debt and got ourselves AAA credit rating for the first time in state history. I know, as governor, as chief executive of my state, I know a thing or two about being fiscal responsible and matching revenues and spending. We're in a situation right now where if you look at revenues as a percentage of gross domestic product, federal revenues as a percentage of gross domestic product, last year it was something like 17% revenues as a percentage of gross domestic product. If you look at spending last year as a percentage of gross domestic product, it was a little bit over 20%, maybe 21-22%. If you look at the difference between 17% of GDP and, say, 21% of GDP, the difference is roughly a $700 billion deficit. 4 years ago, it was twice as much. It was $1.4 trillion. We need additional revenues, and frankly, we need to curtail spending. Oh, something like over half of our spending is for entitlement programs. And what the president says we need to do, entitlement programs are Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, other programs to which we're entitled because of our station in life, our age, level of poverty, whatever. But the president says we need to overhaul the entitlement programs in ways that save some money, save these programs for our children and grandchildren, and do not savage old people or poor people. At the same time, as we do that, we need some additional revenues. My preference in raising the revenues is not so much raising rates as closing some of the, we'll call them, tax credits, tax deductions, tax loopholes, tax breaks, and using the revenues generated from some of that to help to use on deficit reduction. That's the key. Three things we need to do for deficit reduction. One is we need to raise some additional revenues. Number two, we need to overhaul our entitlement programs in ways that save money, save the programs, and don't savage old people. Third thing we need to do is look at everything we do and say, ask this question, everything we do in government, how do we get a better result for less money? I talk to people who say to me, I don't mind paying more taxes, I just don't want you to waste my money. And so there needs to be a continued focus on how do we get a better result for less money. And whether you're Democrat or Republican, I think most people in this country feel that's what we ought to do. We ought to do those three things. And at the end of the day, if we're going to get rid of sequestration, which is automatic across-the-board cuts that, frankly, aren't very smart, if we want to get rid of those and get back to actually governing, those three steps are the ones we need to take.
If there is going to be compromise in the next few weeks, where do you think the compromise will come?
Well, I just laid it out. The compromise I just laid out, Brian, is probably not going to happen in the next week or two, probably not in the next month, but it could happen in by the end of this calendar year. And my hope that's where we find that compromise.
We've been speaking with Senator Tom Carper of Delaware. Senator, always nice to talk to you, and thank you so much for joining me here on Coastal Connection.
Okay, you bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best. Coming up next, we'll find out what new gun laws in the state of Maryland mean for not only gun owners, but gun shops here on the shore. And we'll talk about why scientists believe Smith Island is facing a very uncertain future. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection. We'll be right back.